setting aside our studies in the confession this afternoon to devote the entire service to the baptism that is before us of Kaylee Joy Nyman, that invite you to turn with me in connection with that to Ezekiel chapter 18. Actually, a few verses here I'm going to call your attention to. The first one is Ezekiel chapter 18 and verse 31. Make you a new heart and a new spirit. Make you a new heart and a new spirit. In Ezekiel 36 and verse 26, we read, a new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you. And then in Psalm 51 and verse 10, we read, create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. These verses come from a sermon from one of my favorites, Hugh Martin. This does not come from The Abiding Presence. You hear me make reference to that book often. I think there's one left on the shelf. Highly recommend it. You can be the first one to get it. But it's always a blessing to come across a sermon that does so much to explain how basic Christianity works. And that's one of the reasons that I love that book on The Abiding Presence, is he does so much to bring the objective and subjective elements of Christianity together and show how we need both and how they both mesh together, enabling us to abide with Christ. Well, now there comes a sermon with a similar effect. This is from a little paperback volume put out by Banner of Truth, a collection of Hugh Martin's sermons entitled Christ for Us. And this particular study that I have in mind, this sermon, is entitled Precept, Promise, and Prayer. And then as a subtitle, and this gives some real theological depth to the sermon, the subtitle is An Illustration of the Harmony Between Divine Sovereignty and Human Agency, or Human Responsibility, if you will, how those two things work together. And we certainly have need to understand the harmony between divine sovereignty and human agency. If you look at the verses above, you will see that the subject is the same in each instance, a new heart and a new spirit. The first verse, make you a new heart and a new spirit. The second one, a new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you. The third one, create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. In each verse, the subject pertains to regeneration, but the subject is presented from three different perspectives. In the first one, it's presented to us embodied in a command. Make you a new heart and a new spirit. It is presented to us authoritatively as something that God commands us to do. In the second reference in Ezekiel 36, it is embodied in an offer. A new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you. In the third reference, in Psalm 51, it is embodied in a supplication. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. The first reference, you could say, comes from the lawgiver. The second from God the Redeemer. The third from man, the suppliant. The first is the authoritative voice of majesty. The second, the still small voice of mercy. The third is the humble, earnest voice of entreaty. In the first reference, God presents his authority and demands his right. In the second, God presents his mercy and makes offer of his gift. In the third, man presents to God God's own offer again and pleads for its fulfillment. The first is an utterance from the throne of justice. The second, an utterance from the throne of grace. The third, an utterance from its footstool. So says Hugh Martin. Or, more succinctly, the first is a precept, the second is a promise, the third is a prayer. And we'll see in a moment how these things come together as we contemplate our children, dedicating them to the Lord, looking to the divine commands that are given to us with regard to the raising of our children, as well as the prayers that accompany the promises. When we bring these three things together, precept, promise, prayer, we discover an important key as to how the Christian life is to be lived. Each of these perspectives affects us in a different way, and when rightly understood, we are enabled to avoid pride and avoid deceiving ourselves. We are enabled instead to walk humbly with our God in the assurance of his grace and mercy, and we're guided by his word. This threefold perspective can be found in many other instances regarding other subjects than regeneration. For example, on the subject of the knowledge of God, it is our duty to seek a knowledge of God, an acquaintance with his name, his character, his nature. The command is, acquaint now thyself with him, Job 22:1. The promise is, I will give them a heart to know me, Jeremiah 24:7. And the appropriate prayer is that of the psalmist, give me understanding according to thy word. Along with Proverbs chapter 2, verses 3 and 5, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. So we see how this threefold formula works on the subject of God's knowledge, precept, promise, and prayer. The same can apply to the example of saving faith. This is his commandment, that we should believe on the name of his Son, Jesus Christ, 1 John 3:23. It is also a matter of promise. By grace are ye saved through faith, and not of yourselves. It is the gift of God. It is the gift of God promised in the behalf of Christ and bestowed in answer to the intercession of the priest now upon his throne. I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail not. Luke 22:32, the words of Christ. And it is a matter of daily supplication with all saints. Lord, I believe. Help thou mine unbelief. Isn't that a prayer we do well to utilize often? There's a very concise example of all three of these perspectives coming together within the same chapter, within the scope of a few verses. In John chapter 6, in speaking of himself as the bread of life, Christ gives the command that we're to labor not for the meat which perishes, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life. There's the command. There's the precept. Labor for the meat which endureth to everlasting life. And within the same sentence, Christ goes on to say, which the Son of Man shall give unto you. For him hath the Father sealed. There's the promise. And a few verses later in John 6 and verse 34, we find the disciples' response when they pray, Lord, evermore give us this bread. You see how they work? Precept, promise, and prayer. You begin to see how the Word of God is full of this important and beautiful arrangement. You will always, according to Hugh Martin, find a promise adapted to the precept and a prayer grounded on and appropriate to both. If we may return for a moment to the first subject, the subject of regeneration, Let's look a little more into a little more detail as to how this triple relationship of precept, promise, and prayer work together. First, the precept, make you a new heart and a new spirit. And we are struck at once by what appears to be the impossibility of this precept. We can no more make a new heart or a new spirit than a leopard can change his spots. And yet we're commanded to do that very thing. I suppose some would argue that the command is most unfair, and yet the command should not be regarded that way. There is a sense, you know, in which man has already done the thing commanded in that verse, but in reverse. In other words, man was created with a clean heart, and man created a new heart for himself when he sinned against God in the Garden of Eden. He had been created originally with a clean heart and a right spirit, and man found the way in his disobedience to destroy that heart and replace it with a heart that would be defiled. The command, in effect, then, to create you a new heart amounts to a command to man to undo what he has already done. But alas, the task is far more difficult than hitting an undo and then a redo key on the computer. Try as he will, man cannot make him a new heart and a new spirit. Every attempt to do so by striving to render the obedience that God calls for only magnifies the futility of such an effort. And this is the purpose that the command is designed to serve. The precept can and should make you conscious of your helplessness. In addition, the precept will show you how complete and thorough your impotency is, and it will deepen the sense of this upon your soul. The precept has the power to touch the springs of your conscience and make you feel the weight of your guilt. You can see how the law of God serves the purpose that Paul describes in Galatians of leading us to Christ. For only after we've felt our helpless estate and the strength of our sin and are aware of the weight of our guilt are we ready to flee to Christ. The law then prepares us for the promise by humbling our hearts and bringing us down to the dust before God. And once we've been humbled before God, then we're ready for the promise. We may know here that it is obvious that the wisdom of God is wonderfully exhibited in bringing in the promise at this precise point when we are brought low. If it had come sooner, the soul would not have been prepared to receive it. If it had come later, the soul would have been already given over to hopeless despair. The promise cannot go before the precept, for then the soul would not feel the need of it, and consequently its value would not be appreciated. And the promise cannot come after the prayer, for then the prayer would have no foundation on which to ground her supplication. But the Lord, who knoweth the spirits which he hath made, and who needed not that any should testify of man, for he knew what was in man, sees the end of a spiritual conflict from the beginning, and all the parts thereof in their order, and he comes in with his separate dealings at the proper time and at the proper point. How the promise comes to us then with power and refreshment to meet us in our point of need. How precious the promise becomes to us once we've been prepared for it by the precept. And through the grace and wisdom of God, the precept becomes something that we can strive for with no dread of the guilt we incur by it. And then, of course, we come to the matter of prayer. I cannot change my heart, but I can call upon God. I cannot renew a right spirit within myself, but I can acknowledge my helpless estate to God and seek Him to fulfill His promise in answer to my prayer. This becomes the evidence then of the work of God upon your heart. Have you called upon him? Will you call upon him? Sinners in their pride remain prayerless. They either defy the precepts of God or they vainly flatter themselves into thinking they can somehow fulfill the precepts. The evidence of grace in a man's life is seen in his willingness to be honest before God and the acknowledgement of his helpless and hopeless condition. And so I'm wondering, how many here have called upon God? Do you call upon God? Do you plead his promises because you are keenly aware of your inability to meet the demands of his precepts? The three things work together: precept, promise, and prayer. And now let me make the application just in closing here before we come to our baptism with reference to the raising of our children. We are given commands with regard to the raising of our children. There is a precept or a command given to us in Proverbs 22 and verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. That comes to us as a command. I have to acknowledge that I have felt the weight of that precept as a parent, to say nothing of a sense of inadequacy and even failure in bringing it to pass time and again. Rather interesting, isn't it, to think on what you would call something that pertains to divine power or divine sovereignty and something that pertains to our responsibility. This precept holds out for us our responsibility, and yet before we are done today, we are going to make much of the promises of God that pertain to our children, baptism being a means through which the Nyman family is going to appropriate those promises. And you know, that kind of creates a tension in the life of a Christian parent. It is possible, you know, to be so geared to the promises, to where a parent can flatter himself and deceive himself into thinking, I'm leaning on the promises of God, and in obedience to God, I've dedicated my child to the Lord. I don't really have to worry that much about my effort in raising the child. He's been baptized after all, and I'm trusting God for his promises. And so negligence can ensue when it comes to the precept of training a child in the way he should go. On the other side of the coin, and this is the side of the coin I must say that I have experienced myself, coming up in the Baptist church that we used to attend, where there was such a strong emphasis placed upon our duties as parents in the raising of our children. Oh, I can remember a Sunday school curriculum that lasted the entire year that a man taught. And during the few years we were at that church, that curriculum was taught twice. The emphasis all upon what you have to do in the raising of your children. You better make sure you are in the Word. You better make sure you are in prayer. You better make sure you are exercising discipline in a correct manner. And you know, just a little ways into that course, we had two children at the time, and the thought in my heart was, my poor children, they don't have a chance. I have already, at their young age, failed so miserably in the area of consistency that there's just no way my children are going to make it. I feel so sorry for them. Well, what is that? That is an emphasis on precept, largely to the exclusion of promise. They both have to work hand in hand, and I believe they're designed to work hand in hand, to where we do appropriate the promises that pertain to our children. And in the light of those promises, we endeavor by God's grace to do the best we can to raise them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. So there is a precept or a command that pertains to training our children. Train up a child in the way he should go. That comes as a divine imperative. And when he is old, he will not depart from it. There is also a precept which by analogy, I suppose, can be carried over into baptism. When we read in Deuteronomy 10 and verse 16, the command, circumcise therefore the foreskin of your heart, and be no more stiff-necked. I can't do it. This goes back into the realm of regeneration. I have no power to change my heart. We feel a sense of helplessness before these precepts. How can we raise our children when we are so inconsistent and oftentimes cold in our own spirituality? How can I affect a changing of their hearts when I can't even affect a changing of my own? And how can we possibly affect what is spiritually depicted in circumcision? We can't change a heart. We can, in emblematic form, go through the motions of applying a sacrament, but that in itself does not change a heart. We don't believe in baptismal regeneration. Thank God there are promises given to us in connection with teaching and in connection with circumcision. I love the promise given to us in Isaiah 54 and verse 13. I've pled it many times for my own children. It's quoted also in John's Gospel. Let me read the precept again for you first. Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Here's the promise, Isaiah 54 and verse 13. And all thy children shall be taught of the Lord, and great shall be the peace of thy children. Well, I love that promise. Lord, do what I can't do. Teach my children. I can impart information to them. I can make sure that they're in church and that they're under the sound of the gospel as well we ought to do. I can look at them and try my best to make sure they're keeping awake and being attentive. There are things, you know, that we have to discern as parents, and I think what we need to always be able to discern things that are within our control and things that are without our control. It is within my control to have my children under the sound of the gospel. It is within my control to read the Bible to my children. It is not in my control to change their hearts and make that teaching effectual. But a promise comes to us that God will do what we cannot do. All thy children shall be taught of the Lord, and great shall be the peace of thy children. So we have the precept and the promise with regard to teaching our children. We have the precept and the promise where it applies to circumcision. Listen to the words of Deuteronomy chapter 30 and verse 6, where it says, and the Lord thy God will circumcise thine heart and the heart of thy seed, to love the Lord thy God with all thine heart and with all thy soul, that thou mayest live. God can do what I cannot. God promises to do what I cannot. God can change the heart of my child. God can make the teaching of the gospel effectual to my child. And of course, then, these promises lead us to prayer and lead us to affirm by faith that the promises are given to us in the covenant to our children. Listen to the prayer of David after David had been given the promise that he would be given the throne and that his seed after him would reign on that throne. We read in 2 Samuel chapter 7 and verse 25, and this is such a generic prayer that can be applied to so much. It says, David now praying, he says, "And now, O Lord God, the word that thou hast spoken concerning thy servant and concerning his house, establish it forever and do as thou hast said." You see the appropriation of the promise? Lord, do as thou hast said. You've given me promises. I'm appropriating those promises now by prayer. And so we come now to a baptism of one in our church family. We have a precept before us. The Nymans have a precept before them to train this child right. They also have promises given to them that the Lord will teach this child and that the Lord will, in his good time and good pleasure, change the heart of this child so that this child will indeed have a heart for Christ. What are we doing in the baptism of this child? I think we can look upon it and see it as an appropriating of the promise that God gives in the recognition that we are completely dependent upon Him and we are trusting in the promises that He gives us with regard to our children. And so may the Lord indeed today bless us in this baptism. May we all appropriate by faith the promises that are given to us as parents as we go through the sacrament of baptism this afternoon with Kaylee Nyman. And so I'll ask Henry and Elsie, if you would, to join me up here on the podium.